You're listening to The Rubber Chickens Unleashed.
Yeah. 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 Two step with me. Two step with me. Yeah. 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 Two step with me. Two step with me. One. Here comes the two to the three to the four. Everybody.
Hello, Gamecock Nation, and welcome to TRC Unleashed, episode number 87. TRC stands for The Rubber Chickens, and you can find our writings at therubberchickensblog.com. You can also find us on Twitter, Instagram, and even Facebook if you look really hard. My name is Buck, and I am the conductor of this train wreck. I am joined tonight, as always, by T-Bone and the G-Man. And believe it or not, this is our first podcast since December 1st of 2015. So we are back, baby. It's almost football season.
Waiting on some good news. Just wait.
And we couldn't wait any longer. So what have you guys been up to since December 1st of 2015? Anything?
Well, I had a baby.
he did not.
Maybe a grandbaby.
Right, yeah. It is more likely at this point that he would have a grandchild than an actual child.
Oh, gosh.
Wait, G-Man watched Stranger Things. We'll do a Stranger Things recap right here since T-Bone hasn't seen it.
Yeah, no, la, la, la,
hey,
la, la.
Hey, I went to Europe.
Yeah, that's right, you did. That was good. Where all did you go?
I went to Spain and Italy.
Nice. So what was your favorite part of each country? What was your favorite part of Spain?
Favorite part of Spain? It's probably going out to the Mediterranean in Barcelona. Just going out to the ocean. It's pretty cool. And in Italy, probably the Colosseum.
Let me just go on record as saying, boring.
Yeah.
You're the one that always.
You weren't there.
No, I went to Maggie Valley. So.
He's been commuting back and forth to Columbia all summer.
I went to Whistler's Railroad in Blowing Rock, North Carolina.
It's been a big summer for the Bone family.
Yeah, he has some big goings on, but he can't talk about them.
So. Right.
Hey, have y'all heard of any cool local bands, in the Columbia area that we should be listening out for?
There's a couple.
You don't want to pimp any bands here?
I can't Are you pimp too, any bands.
You're
I can't
too connected?
No. Hey, they hadn't paid their sponsorship. We can't.
That's right. I will. I'll hit them up for that, though.
All right. Well, so the last time we were together, we didn't have a head football coach. Tom Herman was all but dead. The idea of Tom Herman coming here, Sports Talk, Corn Blute, and those guys blew that one, according to some folks on Twitter. Kirby Smart was looking like a done deal to Georgia. And I think T-Bone and I were squarely in the Tom Herman camp.
Yes.
G-Man was a Kirby Smart guy. And we settled, I use the word settled, for Will Muschamp. So let me ask you this. How did you feel about that hire, let's say pre-press conference? How did you feel about it then, and how do you feel sitting here today? And I'll go to the G-Man first. He has his hand raised.
You like how I did that?
Yeah, that's good. Glad we have video. We don't talk over each other. Go ahead.
I will say that Muschamp was my second choice because he had a lot of the same characteristics as Smart. And I was going for, I wanted a coach with the characteristics that, sort of like that we got, had a history in the conference, recruiter, had been around this part of the country for a long time. So I was never excited about Herman because I didn't think he had the recruiting ties in this area. So how was I then? I felt pretty good about it, despite all the bashing from the naysayers from his days in Florida. I felt pretty good about it. And today, I would say I feel about the same. Pretty good about it. Not great. Pretty good.
How about you, T-Bone?
Well, like you've already referenced, I started out squarely in the Herman camp, so it took me a little while to get over that. Although, with the benefit of some distance, some time, I think that would have been a temporary thing at best. And so I think that probably worked out okay. He can do whatever he's going to do out there and take whatever Texas job he's going to take. And we don't have to be, you know, a side note in that. So I was a little bit underwhelmed by the Muschamp thing because I was hurting so bad, you know, on the Herman rejection. But I didn't feel horrible about it. And it's because he knows the conference. You know, at the time, I'm like, okay, this is a safe pick. This is a fallback pick. This is a guy that knows the conference. He knows what to expect. He knows all the players. He's going to jump right into recruiting. And it turns out he did. He jumped right into recruiting. He hired a staff of people that, you know, have seemed to be pretty quality guys. So I would say I went from meh to whatever is right above meh on the side of, hey, good, if that makes any sense.
It's just a different voice inflection when you say meh. Instead of meh, it's meh. You know, it's like got a little uptick, at the end of it. Yeah, you know, the Muschamp hire at the time just, I mean, it felt like a fallback. You know, he felt like a plan C or D at the time. And I don't think any South Carolina fan can deny that. The coaching search was it wasn't a disaster, but it was pretty poorly done.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Let's talk directly about that now that it's over and done with. Do you think that was a desperation hire, or do we think that that was something that Ray had planned all along?
I think he was plan C all along, and I would beg to differ on it was poorly done. It might have been poorly publicized. I think they lost control of the message a few times, but was it poorly done? I don't know, because I think the first choice was clearly Herman. The second choice was Smart. Well, both of those guys ended up not wanting the job, or Smart would have taken the job, but Georgia decided they better grab him before we did. So I think that's what happened there. And Herman just didn't want the job. I mean, I think it's pretty clear. At the end of the day, he didn't want the job. So Muschamp was – I don't think we went beyond Muschamp. I think he was C from the beginning. And you know, we got the best guy available. It's kind of hard when you follow Holtz and Spurrier. You know, we're used to these splashy hires, exciting pedigrees, national championships in their past, all this stuff. Anything – outside of Herman probably was going to be a letdown to the fan base.
You know, this really worries me because we obviously need to do this more often because G-Man's starting to make sense to me. You know? When did this,
happen? I'll disagree a little bit on the poorly done part. You said we lost control of the message. That's why I think it was poorly done. Whoever leaked whatever to Kornblut or to any of the other media should have never happened. I mean, it should have been locked down.
But at the end of the day, does that really matter? None of that really matters. I mean, we've got a coach hopefully we're going to have for 5-6 years. We had a month of kind of chaos. What, you know, what difference does that really make?
Well,
it worked out for the best.
I said this back then at the people who hammered sports talk for, like, costing us Tom Herman. It's like if that's the reason that Tom Herman didn't come here, we didn't want him anyway. or he didn't want us anyway. It was all just a leverage play for him.
Absolutely.
And he's turned out to be a little bit of a kook anyway. I mean, Herman's a little bit of a hothead. He's kind of like a Jim Harbaugh light. He's like Jim Harbaugh without the pedigree. I think he's going to be a guy that's going to be in the news a lot for
Herman. He's a me guy, you know.
Who's the guy at OSU at Oklahoma State?
Oh, I'm a man. I'm 40.
Right.
What's his name?
Who? If that guy and Matthew McConaughey had a son, it would be Tom. I mean,
that's who you're. It's Gundy.
Yeah, Mike Gundy.
If Gundy and McConaughey could figure out a way.
It would be Tom Herman.
And you know, in the long term, that's what I'm saying. With a little distance, that guy was not a long term solution.
I mean, if you look at what happened, okay, we got a coach putting aside the Florida mess, okay, everybody's analyzed that to the cows come home about what went wrong at Florida for him. But before Florida, this guy was the hottest coach in America. Okay, he was the coach in waiting at Texas when they were good. He was at LSU. He was with Saban. I mean, this guy was the guy. He goes to Florida. He went 28-21 at Florida, which by most people's standards in most of the country is a pretty good record. He had some bad breaks, a lot of injuries. He hired Charlie Weiss. They say he was forced upon him. Okay? So, yeah, it doesn't look great what happened to Florida with all their resources and recruits and all that. He didn't win big. But look what happened the year after he left Florida. Okay? Those were his players. He recruited those guys. Then he goes out and brings in Tavares Robinson. He brings in Lance Thompson. He brings in some – and McClendon. He brings in some ace recruiters. Now, of course, you got to be decent to get players, but we've got the building blocks in place to get some players. We need to have a little patience. Let them – you know, we're going to take our lumps this year. We're going to stink. Hopefully, there will be something he can, you know, show these kids out there and do well this year recruiting. I mean, that's the best we're going to do.
So for you folks listening, this is what happens when we don't podcast for like 8 months, is we get hot takes on the hiring of Will Muschamp as the football coach at South Carolina.
That's right.
We actually recorded this in January.
So here's a question, and G-Man, you kind of answered it. It's a question that everybody in the country except South Carolina fans are asking. And that question is, if Will Muschamp couldn't succeed at Florida, what makes you think he will succeed at South Carolina?
He learned from mistakes, hopefully.
We hope. Well, and you know, South Carolina's not Florida. No, nobody's expecting him to did Muschamp follow Meyer? He followed Urban Meyer, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
Yes.
He,
yes.
He'll talk again and again about how he cleaned that program up.
Yeah, cleaned it up all the way to 4-7 or whatever they were, 4-8. Anyway, I'll tell you what Muschamp is. He won me over to a certain extent during his introductory press conference, and you know, seeing the way he's hit the recruiting trail compared to what Steve Spurrier was doing, and the more we learn about what Steve Spurrier was actually, what he was not doing on the recruiting trail.
That's right.
You know, this story came out about who's the linebacker at Ohio State now that's a five-star recruit. Did y'all see the story where he was on campus at South Carolina and Spurrier didn't know, hey, young man, how you doing? Who are you? Huh? Raekwon McMillan. I'd never heard of you. He didn't know who he was. And I think I tweeted, hey, I didn't need some anecdote from some 20-year-old kid to know that Spurrier had stopped recruiting. All I need to do is look at our record the last 2 years.
Right, exactly. You know?
So, yeah, I mean, I don't think there will be as much pressure. I think, you know, Muschamp's going to have a long leash because, I mean, if Muschamp doesn't succeed, where do we go from here? You know, I mean, what's next?
That's right. That's right.
What's next?
He's the kind of guy we need. I mean, he's recruited the Southeastern Conference footprint for 20 years, and he's relentless. He knows how to do it. Now, we're going to lose some battles. We lost somebody yesterday who flipped to Georgia, you know. But he's going to get his share, and bringing in McElwain and bringing in this Bentley kid like he's done.
Yeah.
I mean, when have we ever had two higher profile quarterbacks in our program than those two guys ever?
Right. So the question then becomes, what does success look like? What does 2016 success look like?
Well, let's look at, we've talked about the coach. We haven't really talked about the assistants. I think he's done, Muschamp has done everything right to this point, in my estimation. I mean, I really don't think, if you're a South Carolina fan and you're not happy with Will Muschamp, the way he's conducted himself and the way he's recruited and the way he's coaching, he's talking a good game, then you're just not going to be happy. You just hate Will Muschamp and you'll never get over it, probably. But I think he's done everything right to this point. He's done everything right that we expected him to do right. He's recruited hard. He's good behind the microphone. He knows his X's and O's. And now next is, will that translate to wins on the football field? So let's look at the players that he has to deal with this year, this season. And I'm going
to... Do we have to?
Yeah. And I'm not going to lie to you. I've got all these typed up because, and T-Bone and I talked about this before we went on the air. I don't know who these guys are. This is the least I've known about a Gamecock roster probably in 30 years.
Yeah, they're sticking microphones in front of, for the media availabilities in front of all these red shirt juniors. And I'm like, No idea. The only thing I'll say is all of them have the right names. They're all named the same names as guys that played under Sparky, or Brad Scott. It's like we've got a Corey Banks or something. We've got a
Gerald Dixon.
A Gerald Dixon.
There are no Gerald. For the first time in 5 years, we do not have a Gerald Dixon in the program.
I'm actually looking at the roster because I'm pretty sure we do. we've got a Holloman. We've got some guy named Hutcherson. How many years in a row have we had some guy that didn't end up playing?
Do we have a Hutcherson?
Yes, we do.
Darian Hutcherson was a linebacker for us back in the day. Let's start with the most important position on the field.
Kicker?
Yes, but small fry, we know it. We're not even going to look at special teams because we're not going to have time. But it looks like a two-man battle to start against Vanderbilt, Orth or McElwain. Who you picking today?
I'm picking Orth to start the game and McElwain to finish the game.
T-Bone?
I think that's a good call. I think it may be a kind of thing where McElwain's going to be change of pace to begin with. But, I mean, Orth just, if you've watched any of the videos, and I watched a few of them here in the last couple of days just trying to figure out what the heck's going on. And Orth just looks like he is having a blast. He doesn't look like a guy that's about to lose his job.
Well, he's being a good teammate, too. I mean, it sounds like he's really taking McElwain under his wing and Bentley for that matter. Conflict makes for good radio, so this radio right now is going to suck because I agree with both of you on this. I think Orth, I'd bet you $100 that Orth starts against Vanderbilt, but McElwain probably takes 50% of the snaps. And as the season goes, McElwain will gradually take more of those snaps till he's eventually the starter, in my mind. Bentley, I think, is going to redshirt. I just think he came in too late. He didn't have the benefit of the spring like McElwain had. I think Lorenzo Nunez is going to get 5 to 8 snaps a game at quarterback.
He's going to be your goal line quarterback.
Yeah, he'll be the goal line guy. He'll be a situational guy. They'll put him in the slot. He'll catch some passes. I think he's going to be a very – he's going to need to get about 10 touches a game.
On offense that appears to be slim on playmakers, the idea of getting Nunez on the field along with one of these other two guys is appealing.
Right. It's a smart move. You got to get your best athletes on the field. I mean, it's kind of like your best athlete plays quarterback or your best athlete plays shortstop. Well, in this case, we got these quarterbacks. Get them on the field. Get Nunez on the field for sure. We saw what he can do. Just 10 touches is probably enough because he's 15, he's going to fumble twice.
Right. Or he's going to throw one 30 feet over his receiver's head. The running back position, I go
I
back
don't
to,
know what's going on here.
I saw
Rod Talley, baby. Rod
I remember I tweeted yesterday, I'm not as disturbed about David Williams falling from number one on the depth chart is that Mon Denson is like sixth on the depth chart now. It's like you look at clips of David Williams and you look at clips of Mon Denson from their high school days, and they're just beastly running backs. I mean, David Williams.
What you don't see, though, and what you probably don't know is that, and this is a little trivia for you out there, Shane Burnham was Mon Denson's coach in high school. And if you watch the videos, he's outrunning him down the sidelines.
Oh, Shane, a Shane Burnham reference. All right, we are definitely back.
Rico Suave, baby. It's going to be Rico.
Well, so A.J. Turner is taking first-team reps at running back. David Williams is in the doghouse, and we don't know. We might know. I mean, and I'll give a little speech later in this podcast, but,
oh, God.
You know, don't use your head. Don't use your heart. Use your eyes. What do you see in David Williams? And you've got it. There's enough evidence. You guys know a little bit about the law. There's enough evidence to say that David Williams is just not any good. Okay, he's not gonna all of a sudden become a 1,000-yard rusher here in his redshirt junior season.
Right. What you like about him is that frame, because you look at him running and you think. I mean, when I look at him running, I think Big George.
He looks like Eddie George is who I think of. I know you're thinking George Rogers,
broad-shouldered and all this stuff.
But he just has no shake at all.
No real balance, which is the other big thing.
Well, he gets hit the shoulders and he goes down. You know, I mean, he would be a great, you know, like Stanley Pritchett fullback back in the day. You know, maybe he's not as good as Stanley now. That's a great Gamecock, by the way. But he would be a great fullback, I think, if you still ran that I formation. Mm-hmm. But we don't do that anymore. He's expected to, I'm talking like last year. They're going to run out of the spread. I don't know what they're going to run out of. But
yeah, I don't know if you saw the interviews. They interviewed AJ Turner and they were asking about the difference in the offense or whatever. And he said, and this is, I think, a direct quote. Well, we're not obsessed with the inside zone this year. And he immediately became my favorite Gamecock.
Right? I'll say this about the running back position. At least the only positive thing I can say is we do have a lot of choices.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So here are our choices. David Williams, A.J. Turner, Bear Paulk, Rod Talley, Mon Denson, Rico Dowdle, and C.J. Freeman. So Bear Paulk and Rod Talley, I think, are still walk-ons. I don't think have they been awarded scholarships. I don't know, but they're guys who have been in the program since about 1997, and are taking valuable touches away from some of these younger guys. But I'm not the coach. I'm not out there. I don't see what happens every day. Dowdle is a guy who has got spectacular high school film. Was on crutches earlier this week. I never heard the extent. Is it his groin?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing like a good groin injury. Mm. So let's go outside to wide receiver. Our leading returning wide receiver had 12 catches last year, and that was Deebo Samuel.
Apparently he's got groin issues again, or hamstring issues.
Hamstring.
Does he really? Did that just come out today?
Yeah, he's had hamstring issues all camp. Him and... what's his name out of Myrtle Beach? Brian Edwards. Mm-hmm.
Conway. So there's those two guys who were supposed to take up the slack from Pharaoh's departure. Jamari Smith is the Taki Muhammad of 2016.
We're never going to get rid of that, are we?
He's even wearing Taki's number now. He's wearing number 14. He changed to number 14. So... Jamari Smith is Taki Muhammad.
Hey, just don't worry, though. He's going to play some running back and some cornerback before the season starts. I mean,
is he going to be our long snapper, too, at some point? So, some of the freshmen coming in, Corey Banks, Randricus Dreek Davis, Keel Pollard. Then we got some redshirt guys, Jared Washington, Christian Owens, Terry Gougers in the mix. Chavis Dawkins is another freshman. This cat, Javon Charleston, who I had never heard of before the spring game, and he just looked like Marcus Robinson. You remember Marcus Robinson?
Yeah.
From back in the day? That's who he looked like. I think he even wore number 88.
Marcus, you didn't hear much of during his early college career, and didn't he go on to have a great career in the NFL?
Oh, he was an All-Pro. He tore it up for the NFL.
Played for the Bears. The Bears.
So,
but I'll tell you who to watch out for. Just my personal opinion is this Pollard kid.
Yeah.
I think the Pollard kid is going to be a player. I just got a feeling.
There's some talk they're playing him at tight end right now.
Well, they're playing him kind of in the H-back.
Like an H-back type.
I think he's going to play kind of close to the line of scrimmage. He's going to catch a lot of balls over the middle.
He's a thick kid. And I've told this story via Twitter before. He played for Colquitt County in Georgia, and they played Roswell. My son goes to Roswell High School here in Georgia. They played Roswell in the state championship last year. And the first touchdown that Colquitt called, he ran out of the Wildcat. And he stiff-armed this kid from Roswell, who is now at Virginia Tech, and just put his hand right in his face and drove him into the ground and just, like, walked into the end zone. And it just looked like, you know, the proverbial man against boys. And then one of my son's friends was over here, was a backup linebacker on Roswell's team last year, and he didn't get to play much. And I was asking him, I'm like, did you get to play in the state championship game last year? And he said, yeah, one play. He said, I was a backup to, you know, one of the outside linebackers, and the guy's, his shoe came off, so I had to go in for one play.
That was him?
Yeah. He said, it wasn't, not on that touchdown, but he said, I'm not going to lie to you, I was praying they didn't run the ball my way. He said, those cats were huge and strong, and yeah.
So. Wait, I got a stat for you, though, on Paul. He's 6 foot, about 210.
Yeah.
Guess who else was 6 foot, about 210? Gamecock lore. Gamecock wide receiver.
Well, that's currently my size. So is Pharaoh, was that Pharaoh's size?
Nope. Going further back.
Robert Brooks?
Further back.
Further back than that? Sterling? Was Sterling that?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, Keel Pollard ain't gonna run no 4.3 though, I don't think.
I don't think Sterling ran a 4.3. But I'm just saying I like the body type is similar.
Yeah.
The body type. I'm not saying he's going to be Sterling. Don't get me wrong. But he's got the same. Sterling was not an outside burner. You know, he wasn't your prototypical outside receiver.
Yeah.
Anyway,
we're just going to skip the offensive line. I read somewhere today that the offensive line is supposed to be probably one of the strengths on the team this year, which is an extremely low bar. So we don't really know how good that means they're going to be. Tight end position, we mentioned Pollard possibly played a little H-back. Hayden Hurst, and Casey Hurst, Crosby.
Right. Hayden Hurst is G-Man
has got the hots for Hayden Hurst. He's been on that Hayden Hurst bandwagon for quite a while now. So we'll see what Double H can come out with.
Our gentle listeners can't see this.
Yeah.
But G-Man is actually blushing when you talk about
it. He's like, he was giving the double thumbs up, jumping up and down. Oh, Hayden Hurst fan club right here. On the defensive side of the ball, you think we got a lot of running backs? You know, I know we got defensive linemen and defensive ends, but listen to this list. Quay Lewis, Shamik Blackshear, English, Fennell, Griffin Gentry, Kelsey Griffin, Ulrich Jones, Abu Lameen, Dante Sawyer, Kobe Smith, Taylor Stallworth, Stephon Taylor, Keir Thomas, Darius Whitfield, Boozy Whitlow, and Dexter Wideman.
16.
16 defensive linemen. We should be fresh, if nothing else, during the course of the game.
That's actually a good sign.
Yeah.
Because I remember when we had like three.
Yeah.
Back when Sparky was coach.
Yeah, yeah.
Or Brad.
You know, and I feel a little bit about Quay Lewis the way I do about David Williams, but I'm not nearly that far down. I think Quay Lewis could turn around and have a huge year, but he was definitely disappointing overall last year.
I'll say this, though. The second year after, you know, the JUCOs, sometimes it takes him a year. Yeah. So we'll see.
Apparently, Blackshear, after getting a cap popped in his ass, has been actually playing pretty well this fall, so maybe he'll give us some quality snaps. Darius English, what do you say? I mean, what do you say about
he's fast?
He's tall and fast and pretty.
He's Devin Taylor without the talent. Is what he is.
Exactly, and the speedo.
Yeah, this Daniel Fennell kid. Fennell, I don't know how you pronounce his last name, but he has apparently moved up to one of the first team defensive ends. I see some good names on this list. I mean, I see some, you know, highly regarded kids. Boozy Whitlow, I'm excited. I mean, he had some flashes of brilliance last year.
I did read something, though, that kind of made me nervous yesterday.
What's that?
Was that there's a lot of depth, but they're concerned about generating pass rush without running some games. They don't have that guy who can do it on his own, you know?
Yeah.
And that's really disheartening when you think about our primary weakness, which is
pass defense.
The secondary.
Right. Yeah. So let's look at the secondary, and then we'll come back to linebacker after that. Good Lord. Boyd, Diggs, Elder, Fenton, King, Lamons, McWilliams, Steven Montack.
Recently
added junior college transfer that had offers from nobody is now going to be counted on to provide depth at the cornerback position. Chris Moody is back. I don't know. Rico McWilliams, Chris Moody, Chaz Elder. These names are not instilling any kind of confidence in me at all.
No, it's like Lou, you know, one of his things was, well, if they're going to bite you, they'll bite you when they're a pup. Right. None of these guys ever bit us.
They've never bitten anybody.
I'll say this, though. We're changing. We're going to be a bump and run team.
Yeah.
You know, last year we were a, 10-yard cushion team. I mean, think about the Georgia game. Think about the cushion. We made Grayson Lambert. Do I know his name?
Yeah, that's him.
We made him look like John Elway.
For one game, he was the greatest quarterback in the history of the NCAA.
And it was primarily because of the 10 to 15-yard cushion that we gave every receiver the entire football game. At least these guys, we're going to get burned for some long passes, no question.
Yeah.
But we're going to be up in their face. And I'm excited to at least see us fight for something.
Totally agree. So I didn't write down as many names at the linebacker position, mainly because some of the ones I saw on the roster, I literally had never heard of. So Bryson Allen Williams, this is his year. Okay, yep. this is the year that he has to become who we thought he would be when he got here. You know, he's been behind Sky Moore, and he's been behind T.J. Holloman, and he's been behind Jonathan Walton. Now he's got to be the man. Now that Moore is hurt and he's not playing, Lorenz Bryant, high four-star recruit, has never done anything. Put him in the David Williams category. Is he all of a sudden going to become a really good player here in his fourth year at South Carolina? Holloman has been solid. Sherrod Pittman is the guy that I really am looking forward to seeing, and apparently he's starting to move up the depth chart a little bit. He was a guy who was a tackling machine in high school until he broke his leg. And then Jonathan Walton's a little bit of an enigma. Do you remember the first time we saw Jonathan Walton carry the football at the running back position? I was like, my God, man, he looks good at running back.
Maybe there's your answer.
Right.
But I'm starting to think, if we could just keep the front seven is going to be pretty decent, I think. I mean, the back four scares the hell out of me. But the front seven, the linebackers you just named, that's a solid linebacker crew. I mean,
they're not going to lose a game for us. That's a squad that is not going to lose a game for us. They might not, be the freaking purple people eaters or anything like that, but they're going to be where they're supposed to be when they're supposed to be there.
Yep. Maybe we'll bring back the 84 defense, the fire ants, and we're just going to blitz every play like crazy.
Right.
And hope that you can stop them before they can throw the ball.
You know what? That was fun. If nothing else, that was fun.
Well, it's because we all knew the deal we had made. We all knew that, if they don't get there in 3 seconds, we're screwed.
That's right.
And the only team that really exploited it was LSU and Tommy Hodson and Wendell Davis.
I was at that game. Yeah. But I think maybe I need to send Will a little text or something and just say, fire ants. That's all you need to know.
So all of that said, let's play the sign-up game. Here on August the 9th, while we're recording this, somebody's walking in with a contract. And it says, you can either sign this contract, and I will guarantee you this many wins for the Gamecocks, or you can not sign it and take your chances.
Let me ask a stupid question.
Yes.
Are we playing 11 or 12 this year?
12.
Okay.
We always play 12 now. There's no longer really?
No longer an 11.
Hey, Buck, where's he been?
There is. I think if you will check, you will realize that y'all just unwittingly made a stupid mistake. There is a scheduling quirk 1 year where we play 11.
No.
I don't think so.
Yeah, there is. We'll check it. All right, some of you Twitter folks will check that.
Yeah, you check that.
So anyway, what are you signing up for?
I would be ecstatic if we could get six out of this.
Yeah.
Somehow. Six.
Okay.
That would be, to me, the best case scenario.
This is a very simple contract he's willing to sign. Let me take it to another level.
Are you going
to
start throwing in caveats and?
Yes.
Okay.
I'll take a 5-7 if it's a 5-7 bowl eligible because of other things that are going on. And those five include a couple of wins where we made a big splash. Doesn't have to be Clemson, but you know, if we beat Georgia and we beat Florida, or we beat Florida and we beat Clemson, or some kind of splash where there's some drama to it.
I want to beat
Tennessee.
Them. Perfect. We owe them.
Perfect.
Big time.
5-7 with a victory over Tennessee and with bowl eligible.
So
sign me up.
So okay. We'll have to find a smart lawyer to draw up that contract, and I don't know any. So we'll just have to take your word for that one. I'm signing up for six, and I think anybody who wouldn't sign up for six at this point, I'd hesitate to sign up for five. But, you know, what did we say last year when we were on with Corn Blute and K-Mac? I think I said I wouldn't sign up for anything less than 7 and a win over Clemson, something ridiculous like that. Now, in hindsight, it's just like stoop. So Jorge Brosada on Twitter asks a relevant question here. He says, 5-7, including a Clemson upset, a loss to Western Carolina, and you drunkenly get a Harambee tattoo on your calf. Is that a successful season?
Yes. I got the contract right here. I'm ready to send it.
Hey, I'd take a 1-11 and win over them this year.
You know, you could get worse tattoos than a gorilla on your calf.
What is a gorilla?
A gorilla on your kiff. Gorilla on your calf. Hey, it's late, everybody. So Teddy Hefner tweeted last week, and I think he just built this big straw man and decided to tweet it out that it was something to the effect, if I believe what I'm reading on social media, then I should expect South Carolina to win 9 or 10 games. And I immediately went back at him. I'm like, where are you hearing this? Because no South Carolina fan I know is saying that. And then he tweeted something else, not directly back at me. And I'm like, no, seriously, please retweet these people. I want to see who these people are and what they're thinking. Honestly, I'm not being a smartass. I want to know what they're thinking. And I actually did have a couple of people tweeted back at me, well, if this happens and this happens and this happens, I think we can win 8 or 9 games.
Right.
Right away.
So I go back to, don't use your head. Don't use your heart. Use your eyes. Think about what you saw last year. Think about that team minus Sky Moore, minus Pharaoh Cooper. And don't tell me about Keel Pollard or Dreek Davis or A.J. Turner, any of these guys that have never, you know, played a play in a college football game. You can't count on those guys. You can't. We've already seen that. You know, last year going into the season, we're saying, oh, but Quay Lewis, man, now that we got Quay Lewis on the defensive line, things are going to change. So there's no way you can look at this team, this schedule, this season, and come away with 8 or 9 wins unless it's just flat-out wishful thinking. There's not a shred of evidence that has us winning 8 or 9 games this year. And I'm not mad at you.
Right.
If you're optimistic, that's cool. I'm just telling you, you're wrong.
Right. So. Seven is wildly successful for this year. 7 would be awesome.
Right, yeah. 7 would be, oh, man, yeah.
But you ain't getting to 8.
I'm thinking 250 yards total offense is going to be awesome.
Probably so. You know? I mean, 175 of that is going to come on Lorenzo Nunez scrambles.
Right. screens,
busted plays.
I got one word for you guys. Get ready for screens. Okay, lots of screens. Did y'all watch the spring game?
Yeah. Yes. So we've been a horrendous screen team for years. So if we've got a coaching staff that's come in and taught these guys how to run a proper screen, then I'm all for it.
Well, get ready for some wide receiver screens.
Yep. That's one of the things, if you watch any of these interviews that are provided by Gamecocks Online, provided by the athletic department, all these offensive skill guys, they keep saying the same phrase, make plays in space.
Right.
This offense is designed to make plays in space. And that doesn't mean they're going to magically create, you know, a 20-yard lane out in a zone somewhere. What that means is they're going to get one-on-one on the edge and they're going to throw them the ball.
Right.
So it's going to be short passes. It's going to be quick slants. It's going to be screens. It's going to be things like that.
It's going to be dink and dunk until somebody breaks one.
Dink and dunk.
Well, watch any of the tapes of Duke over the last few years. That's exactly what they've done. And that's how teams with lesser talent can compete with teams of greater talent. And that's, you watched all over the country. It's that offensive philosophy. You get a player out in space. And I mean, that is what has changed the landscape for a lot of teams.
It's an overused phrase, obviously, but West Coast offense kind of stuff.
Exactly.
What we're going to be doing.
All right. So six and six, I think, is where we come down on what the record's going to turn out to be. Let's run through some Twitter questions real quick. I'm just going to go in order here. Andrew Stewart, who strangely has the Twitter handle of @KingCurtis27, says, which position group do you expect the biggest improvement from? Defensive line is probably the position group I'd go with there.
Good call.
Just because we got a lot of depth and we got some potentially some talent there. And depending on what happens at the quarterback position. Chicken Finger Wednesday asks, why do people still have goatees?
Yeah, great question.
So, I mean, I remember a few years ago my wife said to me, you know, it's only acceptable for two types of people to have goatees, and it's baseball players and rock stars. And I'm not even sure that applies anymore. I think having a goatee is almost akin to having a mullet now. It's gonna be the mullet of the 2020s, the goatee. Spurs up, every Twitter handle is taken. So this one is @Garnet and Black Country, but it's GRNTNBLKCOUNTRY. Got to get creative. By midseason, who takes the reins at quarterback? I think we answered that earlier. I think we all think McElwain eventually is going to be taking the majority of the snaps. Chicken Finger Wednesday says, why does beer taste so much better than sit-ups feel? T-Bone, that sounds like a question for you.
Well, there's a basic problem with the question, and me answering it is I don't know how sit-ups feel. I can talk about how beer tastes. A lot,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Yeah, we don't have any frame of reference on that one. So.
It's a null set for me on that.
Jarrett Davis, JarrettD0716, says, given the offensive strength as the O-line, will Roper put the quarterback under center more often? I don't know. I haven't seen enough Roper offense to know if he ever puts the quarterback under center.
He does all three. He's got under center, he's got shotgun, and he's going to do pistol.
Pistol, too. Yeah. All right, well, there you go. DC3_tweets, DC3 from the Garnet and Black Attack show, the GabbaCast. He always asks these deep questions that you really need time to think about, and we never do, but it's a good question. If the Gamecock assistant coaching staff had other occupations, what would they be doing? I don't know if I know this assistant coaching staff well enough.
Well, if you look at Roper, he's an auditor. I mean, he's like got a pocket protector, and he's an auditor. And he's like an after the project is complete auditor. He goes in and checks everything out.
Sean Elliott is some kind of salesman. Yeah. I mean, he's Matt Foley. Maybe he's a motivational speaker.
Right. Yeah.
Living in a van down by the river.
Right.
Jarrett Davis, again, he asks, is it me or does this offense run a lot of screen passes? Boom. We already answered that question for you. Look at us.
We've got the smartest Twitter followers.
Yes. Wando Cock, our friend of the show, Ben Black, says, what did they do with the 80-foot Spurrier banner?
I'm sure Spurrier's got it.
I mean, sit it down on the floor.
He's probably got it hanging. he's lined the walls of his garage with it. Hey, look at that, Jerry. Look at that. It fits just perfect.
My head's tucked around right behind the golf cart right away.
Go, Gator. Nate Kaminsky at Phone Hand, another friend of the show, says, Coach Champ or Coach Boom? Until we actually win a championship, I'm going to go with Coach Boom. I think it sounds better anyway. Yeah. Patty Dan, another friend of the show, female friend of the show, at Patty Dan. Do you think lightning hitting the stadium is a sign of things to come? If so, a good one or a bad one? Mm. Well, lightning usually don't strike twice in the same place. So in that instance, I think it sounds like it's a bad thing. Or is it a good thing?
I don't know. I'm kind of getting philosophical on this one. I'm afraid to go down the trail as far as Patty has taken us.
I'm about
to say it. We need to move on.
Boring. Mm-hmm. Patty's not boring. We're boring with our answers. So we're going to end this segment with Rixon Lane. Always comes up with clever Twitter questions. Using this 1 to 10 scale, how happy do you expect to be at season's end? 1 on the low end is the Citadel. 2 is Brad Scott reverse versus Clemson. 3 is Sean Carson kick return. 4 is David Pollock strip. 5 is a simple 2-yard Mike Davis run. And I think he may have been talking about Mike Davis from earlier in the spring.
Yeah, right.
I think so.
6 is any successful Elliott Fry field goal. 7 is the Alshon Jeffrey Hail Mary versus Nebraska. 8 is Garcia trucking Will Hill against Florida back in 2010. Number 9 is Cooper to Wilds in the 2013 Clemson game. And number 10 is the Clowney Michigan hit. I think we're really sticking with the number 6 here. I'm going to go with any successful Elliott field goal try. I'm feeling like a 6.
What was the one right below that?
Simple 2-yard Mike Davis run.
Yeah, that's where we are.
So it's interesting that Rixon has the last Twitter question because he is who we are now putting our considerable power behind for the new play-by-play guy for basketball and baseball for the Gamecocks. We're writing letters to Ray Tanner as we speak because, breaking news, friend of the show. Actually, this is one guy who is definitely not a friend of the show. Andy Demetra is no longer going to be a Gamecock, apparently, pending a background check.
I wish I had like a kazoo or a accordion or something to make some jaunty music.
I want a picture of Mike Morgan I could be holding up right now.
The bad thing is Mike Morgan ain't coming back. He's got too good of a gig now. His life is better because he got screwed at South Carolina, and
he should have gotten the football job. But if they give him a football job, he'd come back. But that's not going to happen.
Yeah. So we'll be looking for a new play-by-play guy. And I said it on Twitter yesterday. We're not going to get an A-list guy. We're going to get somebody. With all due respect to Rixon, Rixon graduated college like 10 minutes ago. So. You know,
with all due respect to you,
I'm just saying he's young.
Apparently, not much is due.
You know, he's young. Rixon is young, but he's very good, and that's the kind of guy we're going to get. Somebody who's going to, this is going to be a stepping stone for him because you don't get football. You know, and Todd's got football. Todd's a sacred cow, and Todd's not going away. So, be interesting to watch and see who we get. But Demetra being gone is just. I know a lot of you folks out here listening, and I know we've got a lot of new listeners, but we've had a feud with Andy Demetra for 6 years. I guess as long as we've been doing this, we've had a feud with him.
For 6 years, since he was poor.
Yeah, because, right, because he's a punk ass. And,
how do you really feel?
And we've never liked him. For various reasons. He's a smart ass to anyone who remotely disagrees with him on Twitter. He's corny. You know, he shows his ring to, you know, he holding the headphones with
he's
his...
He's a poser. Oh, he tries to pretend he's an athlete when he's not. Oh, God, he's the worst.
The funniest thing to me was when Cloninger wrote, another guy who's got us blocked, wrote an article about Demetra and said that Demetra said something to the effect that he doesn't script any of his, you know, play by play. He doesn't think about any of this stuff. So you're telling me he didn't think beforehand to say back to back for the Garnet and Black.
Right.
That was totally organic, right off the top of his head. He didn't, you know, this dunk that Thornwell had last year, he elevated, detonated, and left pieces of orange across the court. He didn't think about that beforehand.
Right. Right.
You think that was completely off the top of his head? Anyway, good.
He's a poser.
You know, good riddance. The bad news is, as he's coming to Georgia Tech, I was telling these guys, so I'll probably hear him 10 times more than I ever did because he'll be on, you know, doing interviews on local radio here and stuff. So Andrew is gone.
He's following you around. That's what he's doing.
Yeah. He is.
He's going to haunt you.
I need to upgrade my security systems, what I need to do. Anyway, Vanderbilt coming up in less than a month, September 1st.
Hey. And we're going to be there.
TRC is going to be there. We would love to have you buy us a beer in Nashville if you're going to be there.
So what we should do is describe ourselves because people don't know what we look like. You know, and so first I would say that Buck is kind of an outdoorsman. He's a grizzled kind of guy, wears a lot of camo,
right.
A ridiculously large melon on top of his head.
So, Yeah.
The G-man, Harry, in all the wrong places. He's about 4 feet tall and bears a striking resemblance to a young Mary Lou Retton.
So, you get to describe yourself.
Except G-Man's thighs are much smaller. All right, and T-Bone, go ahead. Who would you compare yourself to?
Somewhere, if you would go to like 1974 Burt Reynolds, it's what you're looking for. Yours truly.
I think it's like 2016 Burt Reynolds, actually.
Somebody mess with the switches on the time machine. Oh, God.
We're literally Smokey and the Bandit because Buck is the bandit. I mean, the Smokey. Bandit and G-Man over there is Sally Fields.
Oh, you sounded a whole lot taller on the radio. That is, if you go back and watch that movie, that is one of the most racist movies.
Oh, it's horrible.
It is unbelievable.
I actually saw it about a year ago.
Yeah, but anyway. So yeah, we're not kidding. We'll be out and about in Nashville for a couple of nights there, and we'll be tweeting where we are, and you tweet where you are, and we'll find you. And we're not going to reveal our actual identities. Yeah, if we can help it. So we would appreciate it if you didn't reveal our actual identities either. All right? So I think that's it. I mean, we're back. This was fun. Hope we entertained you. We have quite a few more followers on Twitter, so I'm guessing we'll have quite a few more listeners to the podcast. So welcome. We hope you enjoyed it. Hope we didn't offend anybody. Again.
T-Bone usually does 4 or 5 times a show.
Again, if you think we're going to win 8 or 9 games, we ain't mad at you. If you like Andy Demetra, we ain't mad at you. I mean, we're here to bring peace to the world of Gamecock sports. We're here. We're uniters. We're not dividers, right?
That's right.
They're just staring at me, blank looks. All right, any final parting shots, final thoughts before we head to Vanderbilt? Quick, I don't know if we'll do another.
Quick final thought. I've got one.
Yeah.
This is totally unscripted. Every coaching change, you hear the same things. You hear the same things. Don't fall into the hype. We're going to be whatever we're going to be. We got a good coach. It'll be fine. But we didn't bring a new intensity that's never existed before. We're not letting the players make plays and not overrunning their minds. We're not, you know, we don't have correcting recruiting mistakes from 15 years ago. All these things, every coaching change says that. Sparky said it about Joe. Brad said it about Sparky. Lou said it about Brad. Spurrier said it about Lou. It's what the new coach does.
Right.
So don't fall for the hype. Be patient.
There's a culture change every time a new coach comes in, and it makes you feel like, oh God, our last coach really did suck. I didn't realize it. So, all right, we're looking forward to it. I'm actually looking forward to a little football, no matter how bad it might be. Can't be worse than last year, can it?
It could be.
Can it? Yeah, I guess it could be. All right, guys, thanks for listening. That is TRC Unleashed number 87. We hope you have a good rest of the week, and we'll talk to you soon.
To the five. Now I'm looking at shorty right in the eyes. Couple seconds pass, now I'm looking at her thighs. Why she telling me how much she hate a guy? Say she got a kid, but she got her tubes high. And you 21, girl, that's so right. I went here for shake, coming with them fries. If so, baby, can I get them supersized? Here comes the four to the three to the two. She's probably feeling no much, just right out the blue. And you super thick, so I'm thinking that's cool. But instead of one life, that I need two. Expression on the face like she ain't got a clue. Then she told me she don't run with the crew. You know how I do, but I just don't gotta do. Everybody in the club get tipped. 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 Three, here comes the four. To the six, self-explanatory, ain't gotta say I'm rich. That single man ain't tryna get hitched. Liquor wasted on me, man, son of a brushed it off, now I'm back to getting back to orange juice, man, it's some good ish. Homeboy tripping cause I'm staring at his chick. Now he on the sideline staring at my click. Then comes the five to the four to the three. Hands in the air if you catch drunk as me. Club on the San Juan, put out them tears. Dude, I don't care, I'm a PMP. Everybody in the club get tipped. I don't want to.